thank you again for being with us today, Dr. Rubin. We really appreciate it. Would you like to begin with introducing yourself and what you do?
Sure, I'm Brian Rubin. I'm the chair of pathology and laboratory medicine here at the Cleveland Clinic. I also have a role as the chief of diagnostics, which means I'm oversee both pathology and lab as well as the imaging group, radiology traditionally. I am a bone and soft tissue pathologist, and so I am very active, and I actually sign out cases every week. I look at a variety of different kind of bone and soft tissue lesions, and then I have a research laboratory as well where we study the genetics, primarily of sarcomas, and I'm very interested in taking the genetics and developing therapies.
Incredible. And thank you again for talking with us today about this activity you participated in. So, first question I wanted to ask you is if you could give us a brief overview of what soft tissue sarcoma is.
Yeah, so I mean, I think when you try to explain soft tissue sarcoma, it's also important to explain kind of what it isn't. And so, the most common cancers are ones that arise in organs like lung cancer, colon cancer, liver cancer, kidney cancer. They arise in organs. Soft tissue tumors are kind of in all the different connective tissues that connect the body together. So, those are tumors that arise typically in the extremities or in the wall of the body, chest wall, the back. They are tumors that arise from bone, from cartilage, from muscle, from nerves, from fat. So it's all that connective tissue, and they tend to be a rare group, and people don't hear about them too much.
Since they're such a rare group, why do you think it's vital for clinicians to understand and participate in educational opportunities like this with the most up-to-date strategies for sarcoma management?
Yeah, well, I mean, medicine has gotten so detailed and really specialized. And so people, you tend to develop expertise in the things that you see all the time. So people are very good at breast cancer and lung cancer and whatnot because they see many, many cases. I mean, unfortunately, those cancers are quite common. When it comes to rare cancers, it's really impossible to keep up for the average oncologist. And so, a lot of the work is done in subspecialty areas at big academic medical centers. However, everybody tends to see these things at a very low rate. And so it's important to provide these updates because we can distill the information as experts, kind of teach the, what really needs to be taught so that people are at least familiar with some of these things. Oftentimes they're just going to do some initial evaluation, some minimal treatment, and then pass them along to a multidisciplinary center that specializes in the care of some of these rare things. But everybody needs to recognize them and be familiar with them. And I think that, this kind of CME activity really provides kind of a good, knowledge base for which everybody can kind of, you can learn a lot in an hour from the experts.
I did want to make a point that this activity included three perspectives: the oncology perspective, the nurse perspective, and then your perspective as the pathologist perspective. Why do you think it's important for clinicians to understand all three of these perspectives when learning about sarcoma management?
Well, I mean, these are complicated diseases. And so when patients are going to get therapy, I mean, we work in teams. And so at the Cleveland Clinic and at all the big academic medical centers, and probably most of the private practice groups these days as well, everybody tends to work in multidisciplinary teams. And so each patient each week is discussed. If you're going to be treating a patient, we discuss the therapy. And you need to hear from everybody because, the pathologist, of course, is sort of the cornerstone for diagnosis. You've got to get that diagnosis right. It is what determines all of the downstream therapy. That's why the pathologist is important. However, even in pathology, I may need to work with a surgeon, understand, for instance, where a tumor is arising, how big it is, what the age of the patient is, and discuss a lot, even to come up with a diagnosis. Bone tumors in particular require a lot of radiological input. But in terms of the therapy, then, yeah, the nurses are really familiar, for instance, with all of the different side effects of therapy. And so they really can kind of give their input about, maybe the best therapy for a patient who's maybe a patient who's very advanced in age would not want to, you wouldn't want as toxic of a therapy as somebody who was a bit younger who could tolerate it, maybe a more effective therapy, but one that's more slightly a little bit more toxic. We didn't talk in this particular activity, we didn't have surgeons or radiation oncologists, radiologists come in, but we could have brought those in and discussed as well, just for practical reasons. You can have six people kind of doing a presentation in an hour. But all of those guys are important, and all we need the input of everybody. This is We like to say, you know, the treatment of sarcoma is a team sport. It truly is. And everybody's input is really required to come up with the optimal plan for each patient. Every patient's going to get something slightly different.
Changing pace a little bit, I wanted to ask you if there's been any developments in the management of sarcoma since recording, particularly in biomarkers and pathology, that you would like to speak on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's interesting, and I've been in this field for about 25 years now, and it's not like there's a lot of sudden developments. And so, you know, all of a sudden, one day you're doing something one way, and the next day you're doing it differently. The next day, things tend to kind of move on a continuum. And so, I would say in our practice here, we're getting very interested in immunotherapy with sarcomas. It's kind of a new area. You know, you hear mainly about immunotherapy in melanoma and bladder cancer and lung cancer to some degree. In the more common cancers, but we're also looking at immunotherapy in sarcoma, and we think there's a very small subset of patients who might benefit. You know, the biomarkers that we're looking at are things like TMB, that's total, you know, mutational burden or tumor mutational burden, which is just basically the number of mutations a tumor might have. We're looking at biomarkers like PD-L1. Nobody has really a very concrete answer, and there haven't been a lot of recommendations so far, but you know, the NCCN, for instance, has allowed people to look at TMB and PD-L1 expression as a mechanism of, you know, putting people onto immunotherapy. So I think that's a new trend that I've seen kind of emerge recently. Of course, the classification of sarcoma is always undergoing a lot of scrutiny and reinvention. We're using genetics a lot these days to try to understand different categories of tumors, which are actually turning out to have many different subtypes that are genetically based. I would say that that's an evolving classification. We're trying to understand if that classification matters from a treatment standpoint. But I would say that's always a hot topic, and genetics and sarcoma is just exploding.
Off the top of your head, do you know of any clinical trials that are currently going on with these the evolving treatment options like immunotherapy and stuff in sarcoma and this genetics? Do you know of any clinical trials we could keep our eye on?
I'm not sure what trials are open in immunotherapy, to be honest, but one thing I'm very interested in are TEAD inhibitors. And so this is my area, this is my focus of research. So, you know, I'm always very focused on my own stuff. However, I think TEAD inhibitors are going to be really, really interesting. And so I work on a rare cancer called epithelioid hemangioendothelioma. We call it EHE for short. It's a kind of an angiosarcoma, if you will. It's like a subtype of angiosarcoma. And we've discovered through the genetics that a protein called TAS is fused to another protein called GAMTA1, and they require binding to a protein called TEAD. Now, this is not just exclusive to the treatment of EHE, but is going to be a general theme throughout cancer. And so, for instance, mesothelioma patients are also included in clinical trials, but there's three clinical trials now looking at TEAD inhibitors. And I'm pretty optimistic that one of the trials is going to show some efficacy and move on. They're all phase ones right now, but to move on to a phase two and three. But I think TEAD inhibitors are an emerging area that will be hopefully very successful in the treatment of sarcoma, but then also in the treatment of more common cancers.
Before we end, I wanted to ask if there was any other thoughts you had that you would like to share with listeners concerning sarcomas or just any information you would like to share.
Yeah, I mean, I always like to just share my general enthusiasm for the field. I think we've made so much progress. I mean, when I first started working on sarcomas, I was a resident and a fellow. And so in 1998, as part of a postdoctoral research project, we discovered that KIT was mutated in a tumor called gastrointestinal stromal tumor. I mean, fortunately for the patients, there was a KIT inhibitor that was moving forward through clinical trials, and we were able to start testing that. We actually got FDA approval within 2 years and really transformed that disease from something that was uniformly lethal in 6 months to a disease that now patients survive in some cases for decades with the disease for greater than a decade. And so really moved the needle there. And I think that we're going to start, you know, we've seen this to some degree with some of the other cancers, but we're going to start really to see some very dramatic ability to treat sarcomas, you know, one after another. We've known about the genetics and sort of the biology for a while, but the oncology is really catching up fast, and a lot of good inhibitors are being developed. So I would just say, you know, if you're a patient, if you're a family member, if you're a person who treats sarcoma, there's a lot of really interesting treatments coming through the pipeline. And I think that the next decade, especially with the influx of artificial intelligence in terms of diagnosis and perhaps having some insights into therapy, that it's going to be a tremendous time where we're going to see a lot more progress and really be able to more effectively help our patients.
Thank you for your passion on this topic. It's really refreshing and encouraging to see someone so, enthusiastic about this. So thank you so much for your work, Dr. Rubin, and thank you for your time today.
Okay, nice talking to you.